Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Well, today's episode of Zero Block 30, we're going to try a new type of introduction. We're going to introduce something called rounds, because for the last 125, 130 episodes, whatever we've done, we've said at the end of every single show, any save rounds or alibis. Now we're going to go through our subjects as rounds. Obviously, the very first round that we're going to have is Secretary Mattis sent in his letter of resignation. That's the biggest news of the day. That's the biggest news of the week. And for many Marines, it's going to be the biggest news of the year. But Kate, what else do we got?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, because I'm in the holiday spirit and ho, ho, holy smokes, that's a lot of good vibes. The Navy provides medical treatment to tens of thousands in South America. Up next, looks like Santa Claus is coming to town. Oh, nope, it's just your dad, and he's deploying to Afghanistan with you. At least that's the case for one father and son duo we're going to talk about. Jingle bells, Jody smells. A real-life Jody squats in a deployed soldier's home. Not-so-silent fight after Antifa mistakes the few, the proud, for the Proud Boys in Philadelphia. Major Buzz, your recommendation letter, woof. An officer goes overboard with her dogs. To all these presents greetings, an interview with Dr. Jeanette Neshwat about the best care packages to send this season. Spoiler alert, porn and vapes, totally cool. Rocking around the job tree with Chris Spatola, Captain Cons interviews the man who went from the Army to coaching at Duke to broadcasting at ESPN.
And they were written by Kate, as you can obviously see. And today's episode is going to be presented once again by our good friends at Starbucks. Starbucks has hired, they have hired 21,000 veterans since 2017. Or no, since, fuck.
Keep it going. Keep it going. Don't abort.
Don't stop. Me now.
I have to abort. I don't know where the ad read is. I don't know where the... Oh, here it is. I found the ad read. I have the ad read in my possession. This is clean. Don't worry about it. It's fine. They've hired 21,000 veterans. Since 2013.
I knew it.
They had a commitment and they had a mission. They initially had a commitment to hire 10,000, but they've hired 21,000 military veterans and spouses. Today, they are proud to announce that since the 5 years started, they have hired 21,000, more than double the original commitment, and they aren't stopping. They're going to get to 25,000 by 2025. And if I know Starbucks like I think I do after our partnership, they are going to surpass that by a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
Starbucks.com/veteran is where you can find all the information about what they're doing for not only veterans, but this is very important, especially during this holiday season, the veteran military spouses and family members as well. Go to Starbucks.com/veterans if you need a job, if you need an education. They're also offering tuition assistance to a school like Arizona State's Online College, where you can take anywhere. And you can, because a lot of times in military families, you move all around.
All over.
The good thing about going to an online college like Arizona State and not one of the other ones that aren't reputable at all is that you can continue your credits anywhere that you are, not only in America, but in the world, which is huge. Shout out to Starbucks for doing that.
All right, guys, our first one is a wild one. And quite honestly, we're jamming it in here after the fact because we got some breaking news about General Mattis. So you're going to hear Captain Cons on the phone for this part because he called into the High Haters show for it on Sirius Radio. But after that, it goes back to the regs. Radio Bren, fire that first round. Let's go.
The biggest news that happened a few minutes ago, we're recording it right now, a few minutes ago, Secretary Mattis resigning as the Secretary of Defense. Big, big news because of the way that he did it. I don't think that having turnover in the Department of Defense is that big of a deal. But you often don't see a pretty open rebuke of the president from the Secretary of Defense. And by that, Kate, do we want to read the letter a little bit? You want me to?
Yeah, you can go ahead and read it.
All right. So Secretary Mattis said, "Dear Mr. President, I have the privilege to serve as our country's 26th Secretary of Defense," which, by the way, let me, a little caveat, I would have bet there was like 70 of them. "The 26th Secretary of Defense, which has allowed me to serve alongside our men and women of the Department of Defense, of our citizens and our ideals. I am proud of the progress that has been made over the past 2 years and some of the most key goals articulated in our national defense strategy, putting the department on a more sound budgetary footing, improving readiness and lethality in forces, and reforming the department's business practices for greater performance. Our troops continue to provide the capabilities needed to prevail in conflict and sustaining strong U.S. global influence. One core belief I have always held is that our strength as a nation is inextricably linked to the strength and the unique comprehensive system of our allies and partnerships. While the U.S. remains an indispensable nation in the free world, we cannot protect our interests or serve that role effectively without maintaining strong alliances and showing respect to those allies. Like you, I have said in the beginning that the armed forces of the United States should not be the policemen of the world. Instead, we use all the tools of the American power to provide for the common defense. Similarly, I believe that we must be resolute and unambiguous in our approach to those countries whose strategic interests increasingly in tension with ours. It is clear that China and Russia, for example, want to shape the world consistent with their authoritarian model, gaining veto power over nations, etc., etc. My views on treating allies with respect and also being clear-eyed about both malign actors and strategic competitors are strongly held and informed by over four decades of immersion in these issues. We must do everything possible to advance the international order that is most conducive to our security, prosperity, and values, and we are strengthened in this effort by the solidarity of our allies. Because you have the right for a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects, I believe it's right for me to step down from my position." I think that's pretty damn strongly worded. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't understand. I don't get what's he saying? I'm sorry. I don't.
So I think that what he's saying is that's the nicest way to say you are treating our allies in a fucked up way.
Okay.
Because you're. What I think is going to come out from this is that after President Trump said that we have defeated ISIS, that was kind of the last straw for Secretary Mattis, because he knows that that's just simply not true.
Right.
And I think that with his vision, I just posted this blog on Barstool Sports too, with his vision of that as a leader, you have got to give the men and women fighting in uniform a clear objective. They don't have that because they know if you're in Syria right now, you know that ISIS is not defeated.
Right.
By all accounts from the UN, from people like Adam Kinzinger, from people like Lindsey Graham, from people who are in armed forces committees in both houses of the Congress, they have said there's at least 30,000 members of ISIS left. Kinzinger is well on the record as saying that he thinks that number will double or triple overnight simply by the fact that Trump said that they are defeated, because it means U.S. is leaving that territory behind. Cons, what's your initial reaction of Mattis leaving?
I mean, it was an extremely professional letter, but if you read between the lines, as you said, Chaps, he's really, I think he's just fed up at this point. I mean, it can only be so many times where you say, "Mr. President, here's what I think, this is what we should do," and for him to go completely in the other direction, because this ISIS thing is only probably the, as you said, the last straw. This has probably happened quite a bit, and he's frustrated. The man has given his entire life basically to the service of this country, and it was just wearing on him at this point, and he did not feel as though he was probably being the most effective that he could be if he's giving all of his opinions and telling the president based on everything that he is being told from the folks on the ground and his years of experience, what he thinks we should do and what the message should be. If President Trump is then just going to completely dismiss that, you can't do that anymore to the guy. So I understand why he's stepping away, and I respect the hell out of his service. And I also respect the way he did it in the professional manner that he did.
I almost don't respect the professional manner in which he did it. I feel like he could have had a much stronger backbone in so many things when it came to so many things, especially this, that I almost feel like the idea we have of him in our heads, this, and maybe that's unfair on my part, being a Marine, and he's got like this cult idea that we have of him in our minds of this like ultimate brave, like the warrior monk, blah, blah, blah. To me, this was quietly stepping away and letting him do what he's always been doing and not standing up for what's really right. And that just, I don't know. Who am I?
There are certain elements of that that I agree with, Kate. Like, I do agree that there's certain points throughout this presidency that he could have made his issues more. But I think if you look back and you read all the different letters of resignation from a Department of Defense secretary, you're not going to find anything close with for somebody saying my views on treating allies with respect and being clear-eyed about the most malign actors and strategic competitors are strongly held and informed by four decades. We must do everything possible to advance an international order. I think if you read those statements of things that we must do, it clearly indicates that we're not doing those things right now. We are not clear-eyed and resolute. We are not being one focus on what we need to have. But he's not normally he isn't the kind of guy who pussyfoots around an issue at all.
Like, right.
I mean, be polite, be professional, plan to kill everyone you meet. I mean, there's quote after quote after quote. If he wanted to bring out the lyrical laser and like go straight to the heart, he could have wrote something that was 8 Mile. I mean, he's one of the things that I like about him the most is he's the most read general probably in the history of the United States military. I mean, over 10,000 books, never had anything else going on in his life except for his service in the Marine Corps. He definitely could have come a little bit harder, but I think what he did sends a pretty clear message, not only to President Trump himself, but to Trump supporters that think that he's doing all these great things for the military when the VA is in disarray, when the Department of Defense is saying, we haven't defeated ISIS. Please stop saying that. The Pentagon is making statements directed at the commander in chief. It's like, wake up, everybody. Like, he's not doing all these great things for the military. Please stop fucking saying that he is.
Right. And even in the...
And I do think that he did really cut him down in that letter. You know, just because he didn't come out and say, like, hey, President Trump, you're a huge dick. He really did in so many words in that letter say, hey, you've been messing up for a real long time now, and it's about time that everybody else knows and it comes to light what I've been dealing with for these last 2 years. So I share your sentiment that you wish.
Kate, you did a Venn diagram the other day, Kate, of like these things that didn't go together. What do you think the Venn diagram of people who normally really love President Trump and really love Secretary Mattis is? The overlap there is probably pretty huge, right?
Are you saying military?
This is going to put people's head in a blender.
Yeah, it's going to put people, especially and with his thing on Syria too. That connected the left and the right. Everybody was like, "WTF, mate?" Reading Donald Trump's tweets about. He calls him, General Mattis will be retiring with distinction at the end of February after having served my administration as Secretary of Defense for the past 2 years. During Jim's tenure, tremendous progress has been made, especially with respect to the purchase of new fighting equipment. General Mattis was a great help to me in getting allies in other countries to pay their share of military obligations. A new Secretary of Defense will be named shortly. I greatly thank Jim for his service. Good old Jim. You know, Jim, down at the, the whole thing to me, thanks for the purchase of new fighting equipment. The whole thing to me sounded like, that second grade level bullshit. I'm sorry.
He was almost dismissive of him. I think by calling him Jim, that was a little disrespectful to be calling him Jim. Like,
I don't think he goes by Jim.
Doors. No, I know that, but I think when you're talking his service and you're talking about his retirement, give the man his distinction of calling him General Mattis. He earned that.
Yeah. The whole thing.
I see, there's a lot of things that I don't agree with. I think it's fine. I think the way that he went about saying thank you, if I would much prefer that level of tweet, like thank you for your service, thank you for everything you did, than the converse of what we've seen so many times when somebody leaves, like with Tillerson, this guy is dumb as a box of rocks, like that kind of shit. I'd much prefer his, even if it's simple pleasantries, to going after Secretary Mattis for sure.
Yeah, it's just nutty.
So then who's up next? Who's up next in the shoot?
I don't know, but I'm not going to be satisfied till Mattis drops.
Kate's next.
Till Jim.
Let's just have Secretary Kate.
Secretary Kate, I won't be satisfied till Jim drops a hot rat beef. rap battle on Trump. That's what I expect from...
That's what we should do. We should have Roan come in with Secretary Mattis and just drop like a diss track after diss track after diss track. One thing that I hope comes out of this is, I mean, I hope that we get another good Secretary of Defense. I hope that Secretary Mattis, General Mattis, goes back to his house and sleeps for 4 weeks with cucumbers, yeah, and cucumbers on his eyes. Because we've said before that Secretary Mattis has duffel blogs underneath his eyes. It's just so bad.
He does. He needs a spa day.
The guy's been stressed out for decades. He needs a good spa day, maybe a few week long vacation. He deserves it.
Well, I love that in his free time.
All right, let's stop there with the Secretary Mattis talk. One more thing about Secretary Mattis. Kate, if you're Secretary Mattis, after 40 years of service in the Marine Corps and as Secretary of Defense, what's the first vacation that you're taking after you leave that office?
I'm going to Iceland. I'm getting nude. I'm hopping in a nice, warm, natural hot spring.
Yeah.
I'm like, and then I want like some Marines on vacation to turn around and be like, holy shit, is that Mattis? Yeah, that's what I'm doing. What about you guys?
Cons, what are you doing? 40 years.
I'm with Kate. I'm going somewhere that I could just be naked the entire time.
Yeah.
Not having to worry about a suit, a uniform, and I could just sit naked and eat ice cream for weeks on end.
Agreed.
You guys thinking about Secretary Mattis being naked is a little bit weird and kind of concerning because he's still an old ass dude. I mean, he's still like fucking 7 years old at this point. If I am Secretary Mattis, what I'm doing is because I've been a general level officer, an officer period in the Marine Corps for so long that you know deep down inside that he's always wanted to go check out the banana lady in Okinawa. I am going to Okinawa. I'm going to brasso shit there just so my legend continues to grow. Go to like the headquarters Marine Corps base over there and start brassoing the Eagle Globe and Anchor. And then my first Friday night, I'm going out on Kin Street right outside of Kadena Air Force Base in Okinawa, Japan, finding the banana lady, sticking a banana in her vagina and having her drop it in my mouth because he's still not married, never been married. My guy needs to go and just absolutely have a bender and let it go. Let it fly for a while.
I'm not on the banana lady scene, but maybe I would send him to Vegas with a nice voucher for a slot machine or something. Something wild like that.
A buffet. Just live life, sir. Just go and get a buffet.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, maybe he could go to what was that big resort that had the Saturdays for the Boys party? Maybe next year ZBT could throw one. We could have Mad Dog out there.
Mad Dog's Wet Republic.
Mattis could get out of shape, start shaking his tits all over the place. That'd be great. What's the first round in the chamber, Kate?
Okay, well, I threw in a speed round that I didn't mention. Quick, chaps, what's the best holiday gift for a salty old gunnery sergeant? You have no time to think about it.
Ooh, I mean, I would say Weller whiskey.
All right. Cons, what's the best holiday gift for a boot lieutenant?
A GPS app.
Adorable. Brent, what's the best gift for someone in boot camp?
Or a phone to change your avatar on Twitter.
Yeah. Brent, best gift for someone in boot camp?
A pocket pussy.
That would go over great with the drill instructors. Yeah. Coming in hot.
Hard pocket pussy to start the episode.
Wow.
That was gracious.
Hard pocket.
From your advice.
Classic horn.
You don't even
classic horn up, Brent.
Oh, yeah. So horned up.
Anyways, let's talk about what the Navy's doing.
Yeah, this is a pretty feel-good story that highlights a side of the military we don't often see. Sailors and medical personnel just wrapped up a mission to serve those fleeing starvation, poverty, oppression, and fear in one of the most desperate corners of the world. Our floating U.S. Navy hospital, the USNS Comfort, which a lot of people forget. We have a whole, it's a massive, massive ship that is literally a floating hospital.
I've been on it.
Oh, you have?
Really?
Shout out to me.
Well, what were you on it for?
I searched it for drugs because I was a narc because I had a drug when I was
bummer.
A loser.
No wonder you're on the not cool list.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, anyways,
a narc.
The people on the USNS Comfort worked to lighten some of the burden of the tens and tens and tens of thousands of people fleeing Venezuela as humanitarian and economic crisis worsens there. Enduring Promise 2018 has treated approximately 20,000 patients and expects to serve over 25,000 patients. They've provided assistance in Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia, and Honduras. The Navy and other personnel aboard practice general medicine, dental, optometry, women's health, dermatology, radiology, surgical services, And a lot of one that's often overlooked that we talk about a lot, psychological relief too. Oftentimes when patients were first able to cry and get relief from mental health concerns or worries that they had about their family members, a spokesman said they found that migrants were able to utilize that help and leave feeling a little bit better. So as we head into the holidays, I just think that's a great reminder of what we're capable of as humans and as a military and how good we have it here in the United States. And shout out to anybody who is on that mission, helping others in desperate need. Pretty cool.
I didn't know we had a ship like that in the Navy, just a floating hospital. I had no idea that existed. So that's very cool to hear. And maybe, I think
maybe you should have done a little more research.
Cared about the Navy.
I remember when I think it was Haiti when the disaster struck there. And I remember seeing the news about what.
Same ship.
Yep. That ship shows up where it's needed most. Those people do amazing things. And it reminded me when I was in Afghanistan on my first tour in Marja, they sent us ladies out on a little medical tour. We literally had a hitch, like a little wagon we would hitch to the back of the MRAPs, where we'd throw in carpets, tents, everything. And we traveled from village to village with two women Navy doctors. And there was a group of maybe like five or six of us women Marines who would guard the perimeter, would vet people coming through so that women there could get care. Because even our corpsmen, a lot of times they would let it. They wouldn't want their women to get help from the corpsmen because they were male.
Right, right.
So they were really screwed. So it was very interesting to see like the health problems. And it just showed how desperate they were. A lot of the locals were very hesitant, but that they would drop their wives and daughters off with the military and walk away and not come in and let us trust us with that shows you how dire the situation is. But yeah, that was a really interesting experience.
And I have something that I want to add too, because we do have a doctor coming on our show later who's visited with Secretary Wilkin for the VA, and she's done a lot of good stuff. She was in ROTC and whatnot. But I have a take about doctors. Are you guys ready for it?
All right.
Hit us.
I'm out on doctors.
Whoa!
1,000% out on doctors.
Chaps.
Completely. For normal care, I don't want to see a doctor.
What?
When I go through my TRICARE appointment line, nurse practitioner is the way to go.
Why?
Because they care more. Because I think that doctors just are so concerned about going through all your different medical history. They're going through all the different paperwork. They think they know what you're going to say. It's like, yeah, dude, I know you're just going to prescribe me fucking Singular, but I don't like you whenever you do it. Every time I've had a nurse practitioner, male or female, they've always been great. Their bedside manner is so much better.
Jinx.
That's what it's all about to me. I want you to make me feel when I walk into the doctor's office or the nurse practitioner's office at this point. I want you to make me feel like you care about me, like you want to cuddle me in your bosom, whether you're male or female. Grab me in there, cuddle me.
You want to feel like you're a child again and mom is taking care of you as opposed to just the.
No, I don't want to feel like Tommy Smokes and sit on like a fucking fire engine or anything like that. But if I have a concern, I want you to listen to the concern.
Yeah, as opposed to just pushing you through. What were you going to say, Kate?
That your doctors don't cuddle you guys? That's not a thing?
Not anymore.
Oh,
I haven't been to a doctor.
I haven't
seen a doctor since I left the military, I think. Well, no, I mean, I've seen different types of doctors, but like a doctor for a checkup on, you know, just my general health and wellness. I haven't had a checkup.
Oh, no.
How many years has that been?
Saying,
my God, you guys. Ugh.
Oh, no, never. I mean, I go and have somebody stick their finger at my butt. No doubt about that.
I'll do that when the time comes, but I think I'm all good right now. I feel pretty healthy.
You are so in the age bracket where you need a finger in your ass.
Yeah. I don't
no
think
doubt
so.
About
not
it.
Yet. I feel like my dad just did that. He's in his 60s. I don't think I'm there yet.
Too.
Oh my
Your dad
God.
Wasn't the pinnacle of health. He wasn't getting his skin checked until you
True.
Went
That's the right. He needed
That's
me to
right.
step up.
Anyways, buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to every single type of live event, whether you're catching your favorite musician on tour, shopping for the perfect gift, or searching for the last-minute deal for your favorite team. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person. It's for the biggest plays of the biggest years. SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I find to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere in the world, and with just a few taps, I could be instantly in my seats. I actually just got them too. And this one I'm super excited about. Normally I tell you guys about sports or anything like that. Saturday. It's coming up on Saturday. I am going to, and I see you eating, Kate. Saturday, I am going to Harry Potter. We're going to see the Sorcerer's Stone.
Woo-hoo!
But live action symphony is going to be going, they're playing the score of the movie while we're there.
You going to see the Rolling Stones? No, Sorcerers. It's going to be pretty cool.
Sorcerer's Stone. So if you want to do that, if you want to come with me, I'm going to the 2:30 showing in San Antonio. Best of all, our listeners get the $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS. For, not promo chode.
Promo chode.
Chaps. Talking chodes, folks. Doing a little bit of gooch action. Promo code CHAPS for $10 off. What's our next round? Connor.
All right, so we have a civilian dad who joined his deployed son in Afghanistan. We have First Lieutenant Spencer Weiss, who is deployed to Camp Dwyer in the Helmand province. And then his father, Tom Weiss, takes a civilian job as a Defense Department contractor at Bagram Airfield. Is that, did I say that correctly, chaps? Bagram?
Yeah. Yep.
He took a job at Bagram.
Bagram or Bagram. Bagram.
Yeah. Bagram, Bagram. And at first, Spencer thought, I guess my dad's having a midlife crisis. He's following me to Afghanistan. But then he thought, well, this is pretty cool that I'm over here deployed away from my family, and I can go to the chow hall and see my dad from once in a while. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, the good thing is they've only met up once. He came to Dwyer to visit him. His dad came to Dwyer. But that if they really needed to see each other, that
right,
it could
it's
be
available.
Hooked up.
Yeah.
If they were on the same base, I'd have a problem. If it was me and my dad was like, hey there, kiddo, I'm here all the time, then I'd be like, I love you, but no. What do you think?
Well, 1,000%. 1,000% agree. Because one of the sexy things about being in the military is that you get to go home and you have this element of not necessarily machismo, but really machismo, like that you're
there's
doing your own thing. Mm-hmm. Like you're going out there. Yeah, there's a mystique to it. If your dad's there and that old fuck is walking around, then it's not the same thing. And cons to preemptively strike on your dumbass, that is apples to oranges is what we're talking about.
Oh.
That's apple to oranges. This is like if your dad came and dressed up or did like a ride along with you on Family Day. That's what this is. Because I know, Khan's explained what I'm talking about. I got ugly. Sorry for saying dumbass. We'll go through. Khan's explained
all
what
right.
we're talking
so
about.
So this
that
is kind of a stray round here. This is a stray round. But Kate, to your point, I wouldn't want my dad on the same base either because him bothering me and possibly if we're something were to happen, I'd be upset.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Al,
so,
you could join me on any base I'm on.
Yeah, Al, you're more than welcome with us, Al.
So the new fad right now in college football recruiting is to bring the high school student to your campus, whatever, and they take pictures in the school's uniform, which is very cool. You get to put on all those school swag and you take pictures, you post that shit all over your Instagram, and it's awesome. But now schools have started bringing in the parents, and you have these dads who are middle-aged and not in shape, and they're getting in uniform next to their children. And I just think it's a little ridiculous. And I get that it's like, oh, it's funny and it's goofy, and that's fine. And I'm not a father, so maybe I'll feel differently when I have my own children. Chaps, I'll defer to you on that one. But it just seems like, let the kid have his moment, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to be involved in everything. And very much, I think it's awesome when parents are involved in their children's lives, especially an important decision like, where am I going to go play college football? And be present and wear all the swag. But to get into the photo shoot
With the same uniform,
it's like, that's just maybe a step too far in my opinion.
But it's the photo shoot for Family Day. Yeah. It's different if a dad sneaks in there on the third day of practice. He's like, hey, there's my son. I'm wearing the same uniform. I bought that bitch on Amazon. It's different. But when the program of the day is family pictures,
yeah,
then all the kids are smiling. The only ones not smiling is people who have I don't want to say thumbs up their asses because that might have a little bit, but cons. Like, that's all I'm saying. If my kid was daddy, I want you to come. We have family day at band. Yeah, true. If my kid was like, daddy, they have tuba day, you can come blow on this tuba all day with me. I am doing the Winnie the Pooh theme song all day long. I am going to be there 100,000%.
I get that part
of
and
the way.
This is like the parents being involved in a recruiting weekend is nothing new. They've always brought parents and very much involved them, so they understand what is going on at that university and really allow the parents to get a feel for the team as well. It just feels like something that the parents don't need to be involved in.
I would love to see a Paris Island graduation where the mom and dad also show up in alphas. Oh, is this not cool? Is this not acceptable? Like,
well, we loved it when Kate's parents showed up and they were wearing the ZB t-shirts.
I'm all about like parents supporting. That's not my, I love parents. Like, they can even be in the picture.
Stick
in
the mud.
The one step too far that I think is a little, it is
stick
funny looking. But putting on the uniform, I just think it's ridiculous. Be in the picture. Be
Says
supportive.
The guy who still goes to his alma mater and jumps around on the sidelines.
Not uniform, though. Not uniform.
I agree with Cons on this one.
If they said you could, you 1,000%.
No way.
If the coach was like, come suit up, you'd be like, I'm so there. Anyways, well,
no,
next
if the
round.
Coach said suit up, I don't know.
Nope,
I still got a year of eligibility
next round.
Left.
Next round.
So up next, we have a literal Jody who has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for living in a deployed soldier's home and stealing his stuff. First off, for anybody who doesn't know, can you guys describe in a few sentences, what is a Jody?
Jody is...
somebody who came in and stole Khan's bitch.
Oh! Ugly! Ugly!
Man, I cannot catch a break today. I got chaps giving me shit about my Twitter avatar. I got a huge freaking pimple on my face that won't go away in time for the holidays.
I didn't want to say anything, but my
Jesus.
God.
Yeah, it's huge. I don't know. I'm just not having a good run of things right now. But yeah, that's what it is.
But basically, a Jody is any man who stays at home while everyone else goes to war. He gets to enjoy all the things the soldiers are missing, specifically the soldier's girlfriend or wife. Mm. And what's the opposite of a Jody? Stealing your man.
Yeah, it's one of the most common things that drone instructors will say as soon as you get to boot camp or wherever you're going. They will say, Jody's back at home banging your girl or banging your dude or whoever.
Right.
Somebody's getting banged, and it's always by Jody.
Yep.
Well, in this case,
Jody gets around.
Yeah, Jody gets around. In this case, the Jody was 39-year-old Eric Hunt, and though he wasn't having sex with the soldier's wife, he was definitely
better
fucking
than Mike Hunt.
This is true. He was definitely fucking the soldier over. He snuck in. He smuggled himself into this soldier's home, sold a bunch of his stuff, and went on a crime spree for good measure. He tried to explain in court that he and his girlfriend were homeless and they just needed a place to stay warm. But not true, because the guy stole televisions, tools, all this stuff from a soldier who was over in Iraq.
That's rough.
Yeah.
And I could see how that could happen. When I deployed to Iraq, I didn't have somebody living in my house until maybe 3 or 4 months into my deployment. So my house was just empty. I had some friends who would go over periodically to check on things. But it could have very easily happened to me that someone broke into my house and stayed for...
Eric Hunt, Mike Hunt. I think Mike Hunt was in your house. You haven't invited me over yet, so it hasn't been. So that's all right.
But yeah, this is rough.
And I had no issue with this story because I am always thinking that homeless people have got to improvise, adapt, and overcome and do whatever they can to be warm.
This is true.
So if you're homeless and you need somebody to stay in, I don't think that that's an issue at all. But you have to respect where you were, because everybody knows, if you've listened to my stuff for a while or read my stuff for a while, huge Alaska show guy. Life Before Zero.
I love
Life
that
Below
show.
Zero. She has a camp in the far reaches of the Arctic Circle. She always says, you can come to my house, you can stay in my cabins, you can eat whatever you want to. Leave it clean, leave it the way that you
found
it. Like, whenever you got there, leave it the same place. Stealing and doing all that shit is where I'm out on the homeless guy. Mm. If you came into my house and you lived there and I didn't know and I came back and it was still as tidy as whenever I left, I'm fine with you living there.
What if someone used your bathtub, chaps? That's a sacred place for you.
As long as it's clean. Okay. I mean, as long as it's clean, I'm okay with it.
The official stance of Zero Block 30, you can squat in a soldier's home who's deployed, just replace the teepee, put some fresh fruit in the fridge when you're heading out.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say this way? You can squat wherever you want to, just don't shit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Positive. I like that. Yeah, I like that. Fair enough.
You got any good Jody stories? Any good stories from when you were in?
I had I don't want to get too specific. I had a higher up who got Jody'd hard.
Christian names, please.
When he was in Afghanistan. And then he ended up finding out when he got back, he had suspicions. But when he got back, they had the phone locators, he and his wife, so that, like, I guess people who are super close like that, I've never enabled it, but you can see where your spouse or your partner is or whoever based off their phone location. And she'd be like, I'm going to the gym. And then her little thing would go the opposite direction. Ugh. So he followed it.
And then an eggplant emoji shows up.
Yeah, yeah. And the rain starts coming down off them.
That's
but
tough.
Yeah, and so he went and found out, and they admitted that, yeah, this guy had stayed. He was actually another Marine, which made it worse.
Ooh.
And he hadn't deployed, and he took the other Marine's wife while he was deployed.
I had a
so
similar
we
thing.
Almost have that kind of situation. We don't have like not like my wife and I don't cheat on each other or anything like that.
That's nice.
But we have something that gives her the ability to see what I'm doing because I work from home all day. Like she knows I'm blogging or I'm podcasting or I'm doing whatever all day long. We have this security system that as soon as I leave, if I walk in front of my door, it will send a chime to her phone, like letting her know that I'm leaving or somebody's like broke the plane of the doorbell, which is great when we have a package delivered because I just go get it right away. There's no risk of anything getting stolen. But the part that sucks is that she knows when I do it at like 11:45 or 12:15 that my dumb ass is going to McDonald's. I'll be driving in my truck thinking I'm being slick, and she's like, where the fuck are you going?
Does she fat shame you about that?
You specifically? She doesn't fat shame me, but she's right because she says, she's like, I ask you every single week whenever I go to the grocery store, we go to the grocery store, what do you want for lunch? And I'm always like, I just want sandwiches. I'll eat sandwiches. I'll warm them up. And then by Wednesday, I'm fucking sick of the sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want sandwich. Yep. I want like – and I just need to get the fuck out of my house because I'm here all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So just breaking it up the monotony. And that's what I tell her. I'm like, it's not the fact that I just want to eat out all the time, although Chick-fil-A is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's just I need to see something different than my own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't get nuts.
You gotta make
I work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I work 50, 60 hours a week and I'm in my house. And then when I get off, I'm still here. So it's like if I don't go out to eat lunch, there could be days that I don't leave from Sunday at like noon until the following Friday night.
Oh, yeah. That's good for your mental health to get out.
I agree.
You?
Oh, yeah. I've told this story before, but the craziest. We're a month and a half into my deployment, and one of my soldiers found out that his wife was sleeping with someone on rear detachment.
Oh, the ultimate Jody.
Yes.
Wow.
And it should have been a red flag, though, when his wife was a dancer that he married 2 weeks prior to deploying.
Checks out.
Yeah.
We're not going to stripper shame.
No. My goodness. No, not
never. Not on Zero Blog 30.
All right. Let's move on to the next round. What do we got?
All right, I'm taking this one, too. I'm being selfish. I'm being a selfish teammate here.
Okay. Because
this took place down in my neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. So, Antifa, you've heard of them. They're kind of the opposite of the alt-right. They're like the super far left. Well, these guys, two of them, they looked like the McPoyles from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But they viciously attacked two Marines this November, so it's on trial right now. But basically, long story short, these two Marine reservists were in Philadelphia visiting. It was probably for a ball or something. They're exploring Old City Philadelphia when Antifa guys come up to them, this big group, they're all wearing black, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, hey, are you Proud Boys? Because they were looking for the alt-right guys, the Proud Boys, to beat them up because they were also in town for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Marines have no idea what the fuck's happening. So they're like,
yeah, of course we're
proud. Yeah, we're like the few of the proud. We're very proud.
All Marines are from the South.
All Marines are from the South. They're gosh darn right, we're proud. So they're like, yes, we're proud. The Antifa crowd proceeded to beat the shit out of them.
Did it say how many people were beating them up?
Now, only two are on trial right now, but apparently there was a whole big crowd around them attacking them with mace, punches, and kicks,
Jesus.
Calling the Marines Nazis and white supremacists. By the way, they're both Mexican-American. And they were the one Marine stupid. Testified that he was bewildered at the white supremacist slur and yelled, I'm Mexican. Despite this, they began to call him various racial slurs, too, going off his...
Yeah.
And the guys that they arrested have clear ties to Antifa. So it's like, who? What are you doing? So I kind of dove into it today. Both of these groups, like the Proud Boys and the alt-right and Antifa, they are all just douches who alienate everyone they come into contact with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my God.
The worst.
But what? It made my blood boil what they did to these Marines. Like, it really pissed me off. So I hope they get completely fucked up.
Especially because these Marines, they didn't do anything.
They didn't do. But also, how absurd these poor guys are in town for like some marine event.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we're proud. And yeah. It's like all of a sudden, what? So.
What would you do? What would you do if people came up and then you just
beat the shit out of them?
Okay. Anyway. But like, honestly, like, what do you actually even do in that situation if a group of people come up on you? And you're cornered by a group of people.
There's nothing you can do.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah,
like in a situation like that, whenever you're jump, like just protect yourself as much as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Turtle
yeah.
up.
They said there's too many.
There's got to be a point where you realize the smartest combative tactic that you can have is just protect yourself. Like do whatever you can to protect yourself.
They were going to do McMap. They were going to do McMap, but they didn't want to hurt the Antifa guys
that
too
was
much.
Nice
dude, if those Marines would have got a little bit of distance and they were able to produce that rear hand punch.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
If they would have done the rear hand punch and flared that heel out. Ooh, Marine Corps.
Oh.
If you had heard two or three
Marine Corps
come out. Goodness
then they're
gracious.
Done for. That's the Hadouken of the Marine Corps.
Looking back, Kate, whenever you first started doing McMack tan belt training, didn't you feel like a fucking badass when you hit that first Marine Corps, Marine Corps, Marine Corps, and you pull it back and you're holding your face?
Yeah.
But now when I look back at videos of people doing McMack, like, there's no wonder fucking Marines get their ass kicked all the time. And I think that's a huge misnomer about Marines. 90% of Marines that I know, if they're in a bar fight one-on-one, would probably lose. That's not the mystique at the Marine
down.
Corps.
Yeah.
But if you put them in a group and you give them weapons, they're really fucking good.
They're unstoppable.
Marines individually,
terrible.
Marines in a group, undefeated. Well, we've been defeated a couple times. But
yeah.
For the most part, undefeated.
Crushing it.
Can we hear your best Marine Corps punch or do your best Marine Corps punch?
The key is to actually say creamed corn.
Oh, okay.
So I go, cream corn, cream corn, cream corn.
Why?
And they sound like, I don't know, just because it rolls better. Marine Corps is a little tougher. Cream corn just rolls off the tongue. So.
Hey, you know what's, speaking
of getting... I haven't laughed. One more thing before we go on, based on the cream corn thing.
Yeah.
I saw a video of President Trump today where somebody edited it because, you know, President Trump constantly says billions and billions and
yes.
billions.
Yes.
Somebody went in and just produced where it says B and then ends at the end. So it sounds like he's saying beans. Is he just saying, is President Trump saying
billions and billions and
billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and
beans and beans and beans and beans and beans.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I was going to say, though, we're getting some respect around these Barstool streets. There was another podcast, KFC Radio. They did a hypothetical. What podcast would win in the Hunger Games? And they said you are not allowed to pick Zero Blog 30 or High Haters.
Cream corn. Cream corn.
Yeah.
Because they know they get the cream corn.
I think we would get our asses whooped by some of the podcasts.
Come on.
We're all pretty doughy now.
We would. I think we would have fat piece of shit.
But it's the Hunger Games, so we would have weapons and such.
That is the caveat.
Yeah.
I say constantly, if you want me to fight you one-on-one, you have a really good chance. You give me. I told Carabas, actually, who's like, he's pretty in shape. And he was like, do you think if me and you went into a forest and somebody has to walk out alive or dead, who's walking out alive or dead? And I said, do I have a weapon? And he said, yes. He said, what kind? He was like, you could use whatever you want. I was like, if I have an M4 or greater rifle, you are going to die.
Right.
There is no doubt in my mind. If it's hand-to-hand combat, you have a pretty good shot. Because all it takes is one good punch.
Mm-hmm.
One good punch and you're done.
But I like to think that we would
but you give
take
me a weapon,
out every other podcast.
I'm good.
Oh, darn, I shouldn't have picked the smoke canister. I'm not going to get
it. I would say probably this would be mine. I would say to me it's a tie between anything that Willie Colon is on and spittin' chiclets.
Yeah,
yeah.
I initially said spittin' chiclets
yeah.
just because I think Biz is just a savage. And
that's our
and
ice hockey podcast for
fights.
Those who don't know.
Yeah.
That's our ice
Biz
hockey guys.
As opposed
wild.
To our roller hockey.
All right,
podcast.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Next, let's go to the next round. We have this one. Kate, you are downright giddy, so why don't you take for your third one in the row?
I am so
this
sorry.
Just if Kate was a major, this would be major Kate.
Absolutely. I was scrolling through Twitter, and as usual, a lot of veterans on my Twitter, and the person took this off the site Rally Point, which I think is on military.com,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a place kind of where people can hash out and talk and blah, blah, blah. So somebody posted this. At Tyler A. King said, that time an Army major lied on official records and faced a formal reprimand on her permanent record So she submitted a character reference letter seeking mercy to the general from her dogs. Here is that letter. Ma'am, we are right. And by the way, there's two pictures of dogs at the top to let you know that it's the dogs.
I can already tell you. You were about to do a Southern
accent. Yes, she was.
Think this person's stupid.
These dogs do. Both of these dogs are from the South. Let me preface that. These dogs wrote this letter.
Why don't you do it with a Delco accent?
Attention, Major General, redacted. Ma'am, we're writing this on behalf of our mommy, redacted, who is the best mommy ever. We are two of the cutest shih tzus in the world. So that is what our mommy tells us. Our mommy is very kind and caring mommy. She always spends special time with us, takes us to the park and for walks. Our mommy does so much for us, and we love her for that. Lately, our mommy has been sad. She tells us that there is some type of mistake or misunderstanding at her job, and that you are considering taking actions to affect her permanent life, which could have a negative effect on her career in the military. We ask you to reconsider not making those records permanent to our mommy's files, for she would never do nothing inappropriate. Whenever she takes us for walks, she will pick up our mess we leave in other yards, which is the right thing to do. Please help to make our mommy happy again so that we can be happy and to continue enjoy our time with our mommy. Sincerely, paw prints. There are actually paw prints on the bottom of this fucking letter. I'm dying. Ah, so I didn't feel like making an account for Rally Point because I'm a lazy piece of shit, but I followed the Twitter scroll on this. Apparently, the woman is legit a lieutenant colonel now.
Wow.
This woman is still in the military.
Wow.
My
honest to God, and I don't like to say this, and I don't use this lightly because everybody knows I have pretty liberal tendencies. That woman deserved the electric chair.
Hold on. Let me see what the dogs think of that. Oh, my God. Bless you, but no.
You know what you have to look to? You have to look at to whatever officer read this and didn't just laugh in the woman's face and throw it in the trash.
You know all the punishments that came along for whenever we had – I think it was an Air Force master sergeant who reenlisted with a dinosaur.
Right.
The outrage should be there for this. If you're legitimate trouble and you have – I want to know what the actual – there's no way this is real. First of all, I'm calling bullshit. Absolutely no chance this is real.
Somebody make a Rally Point account because I'm just not going to. Somebody do it. Somebody get on there and find out because this – to me, the threat on this was a lot of people confirming and who looked her up in the system. Because I guess they were able to see, like, I guess it's not as well redacted as you think if you, I can kind of see through the black. They looked it up and, like, this is a real person.
I can't imagine in a world where an officer in the military would put this in front of her superior officer and do that not as a joke.
So
you know what I can't imagine?
What?
I can't imagine not having a boner. If you haven't had a boner, you might want to go with our friends at 4Hems, because at 4Hems, you can get all the science that you need to help with your ED. 4Hems connects you with real doctors, medical grade solutions to treat ED, well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you combat that same ED. No waiting room, no awkward doctor's visits, no lines. Save hours by going to 4Hems.com. It's so easy. Answer a few quick questions and chat with a doctor for a confidential review. Products are shipped directly to your door. Severe ED, we're talking boners now, isn't just an issue for old rich guys in bathtubs. I feel like that might be a shot at Dave. It affects men in their 30s and into their 40s, even if you're 41. Being the best man means being performing at your best. It's erectile without the dysfunction. Hard made easy. Say hello to your little friend.
Not so little now.
/ZBT. Any save rounds, alibis before we get into the interviews? Or you guys want to go into the interviews now?
Let's go into the interviews. We'll take save rounds, alibis at the end.
Let's talk to Dr. Jeanette Neshwat. Right. We are now joined by Dr. Jeanette Neshwat. You first came onto the Barstool scene due to vaping. You were on a Fox News segment that our own Tommy Smokes, Tommy Scavelli, showed up to, and he was kind of playing this character where he was this, like, don't care about anything, I just love vaping. And he was on the pro-vape side. You were on the, here's why vaping's not so great for you side. And the whole thing just went viral because I'll say it. He was such an ass in that segment. I mean, just a complete ass. And you handled it so well with a sense of humor. You knew, I think, right away kind of what was going on.
I didn't know you guys watched it. I actually didn't realize he was not really a smoker, or he is, until afterwards. So I was just there to talk about, you know, the impacts on children and how it affects their brain and growth and development and causes mood disorders and behavioral disorders. So, hey, I thought if we have to use humor to get the word out to millions of viewers, hey, I think you guys did a great job. I think Tommy did a good job of helping me do that.
I think inadvertently he showed the dangers of vaping in a much.
Yeah, you're right.
But we looked into it and we saw that you have a lot of military connections. Your brother-in-law is a colonel. Your sister has deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. She is now, am I saying this right, the presidential envoy for hostage affairs,
yes,
Captain?
Yes, my big sister, Julia, she's my hero. She's such a great role model and inspiration to me. She served in Iraq and Afghanistan. So did you, which thank you to you and to you, Chaps, for your service.
Thank you.
Know, on
appreciate
behalf of
that.
All the medical community, we appreciate your sacrifice and what you've done. But yes, my sister Julia, Army Military Intelligence, so she served, and currently she's working in the State Department to help bring back hostages from Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and it's a very difficult job. But you know, somebody's got to do it, and she's got good days and bad. They bring some people home, but some they're still fighting to bring home, the hostages that are being held overseas.
Yeah, I can imagine that job is extremely... I honestly, until I read it, I didn't even realize that was a thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now to know that people are working on this 24/7, and definitely that has to be stressful. And you dabbled a little bit yourself back in the day.
Yeah.
A little bit, yes. You know, I have so much respect for veterans and soldiers because I have a taste of what you have done, especially having a military family. But I did complete, you know, Army ROTC just through college.
Mm-hmm.
Did my advanced training in Fort Lewis, Washington,
okay.
Mount Rainier, which was an amazing experience that will be with me for life. But, you know, I ended up going off to medical school. But even though I'm not, you know, active duty or reserve, I still take care of veterans and their families and patients as a physician right now.
Now, going back to your ROTC training, which facing movement would you say is your favorite? Like, my personal favorite facing movement was always about face. What, do you have a favorite?
I can't remember.
Me neither, honestly. And I was
the salute.
Yeah.
The salute,
make
yeah.
Make sure my finger was bent the right way.
And it was all. I still mess it up. Every now and then, they got to correct me on it because I don't know. A lot went out my one ear, and then as soon as I EAS'd, it like went right out the other. So it's, I hear him recall things with such clarity, and I'm like, I don't remember any of this stuff. Oh my God.
And I always say, like, if you want to go into the ROTC, that's the best way to get chicks in college. They see you going in that uniform. And they're like, oh, yeah. Was that your experience, too? The dudes just climbing up?
All the dudes and all that. Yeah.
All I remember is waking up at 4 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, doing the two-mile run, the push-ups, the sit-ups, and being in the woods on the weekend.
Yeah.
But it was definitely an amazing experience that will be with me forever.
But you decided to go the medical route, which, very, very cool. And now you're based out of New York City. What do you do now?
I currently am the medical director for CityMD, and then I also do medical teachings on television to try to spread the word and teach about medical issues and topics. For example, smoking, vaping, diabetes, you know, high blood pressure, strokes, heart attacks, that sort of thing. So I do family, general, and emergency medicine. So just a little bit of everything.
I was almost afraid.
Perfect.
I was almost afraid to talk to you because I saw you recently wrote a piece about the 7 bad things drinking does to your body. And boy, oh boy.
And Kate just came. Kate, I'm going to be honest with the doctor. Kate's coming off like a 4-day bender.
Moderation is the key,
I know.
Kate.
What?
So for women, no more than one alcoholic beverage in a 24-hour period. And men, you guys are lucky. You get two.
Wait, no
not
more than
fair.
One?
Well, those are the guidelines according to the American Heart Association.
See, that's the problem with science. You guys are completely unrealistic. Nobody's going to go to a bar and have one glass of wine. That's unrealistic.
Well, for women. Well, women are, you know, our metabolism is different than men. You guys are allowed to have two. But, you know, hey, you got to think about your liver, your kidneys, your heart.
That's true. I would love to walk you through a barracks party on a Friday night and be like, help fix these men and women. That actually sounds like a mess.
Well, it's good that you do a lot of preventative stuff, because with ZBT, we're a military podcast, and people constantly ask us, what's the best thing to send in a care package? And we want to get doctor's advice on the most common things that go into a care package to see if they are doctor approved. Can we do that? Do you mind?
Sure.
Okay. The number one common request for a gift package is cigarettes. Doctor approved or not?
So here's when you're overseas, I mean, cigarettes, they're just loaded with carcinogens and toxins and tar and chemicals. And I've said it a million times, smoking causes more deaths than alcohol, drugs, car accidents, HIV combined. So
now's
a
bad time to tell you I'm also a smoker. But, oh God!
Well, that's okay. I'm going to help you quit along with Tommy. But
okay.
But looking at the other side of it, I would never tell a soldier who's in Iraq or Afghanistan or the front lines to quit smoking, because it can, you know, calm you down, relieve anxiety. So that's just there's a time and a place to quit. And
right.
Overseas is just not that time. Maybe when
Sweet.
They come
Doctor
back.
Doctor approves smoking. No. Next
one. How about send some gum? Can we do some gum instead?
Yes, or lollipops
yeah.
or something.
Nicotine gum. That would help.
Yeah.
Nicotine gum would be helpful.
All right. So that's the first one. Trade it out for nicotine gum. Number two. Big requested item over there. Not that I would know. I would never. Porn magazines.
I'm not against that. Look, if your
there
loved one is in the United States, and it can help relieve stress and tension if you need a little extra assistance. If you're in the barracks with a bunch of men or a bunch of women,
yeah.
You know, you have to be careful with fraternization with your colleagues. So
true.
True.
There you
All
go.
Right, number three. So, porn magazine approved, cigarettes approved. Number three, no. cans of Copenhagen.
dip.
Again, cigarettes, dip, not healthy, can cause throat cancer, oral cancer, tongue cancer. But I don't think overseas is the time and place to quit when you're on the front lines and protecting yeah. us here in America.
Number four.
I think you're going to actually get behind this one big time.
Yeah. Number four, socks.
Socks?
Yeah, how are we feeling about socks?
Oh my gosh. Send tons and tons of socks. Absolutely. Cotton.
You look relieved when we said socks after going from dip and porn and cigarettes.
You know, especially because if they get wet or dirty. I remember when I was in Fort Lewis, Washington, Mount Rainier, my toes were I had no sensation for like 2 months after I left, because they would always get wet. So absolutely.
Especially out there.
Yeah, socks. Send 100
Sidebar,
pairs.
About toes, I suffer still from ingrown toenails, and I have a very specific steak knife that I use to dig it out. Do you think that's healthy or not?
Let's see a podiatrist instead. Otherwise, you're going to get what's called paronychia, where infection can set in. But, you know, you could permanently cut out that nail that causes that.
See, and before we move on, I think that kind of stuff is the most impressive things about doctors. I would never be able to memorize anything with Latin influence in the name.
I know.
Ever.
I was just like, she just pulled out a big.
It.
Yeah.
I mean, and medicines, being able to pronounce medicines right. I think that is that part of med school where you just have to get up and say the name correctly?
Not necessarily. You just get used to it. You know, if you need a medicine that you know is going to save somebody's life, you're just like, go grab me some of that. You know,
right.
I need a milligram of epinephrine, you know, not a milligram. But you just get used to it.
Yeah.
All right, number five, gummy bears.
Absolutely, gummy bears. You need that little sugar rush. Again, you know, you're limited as to what you have overseas. Now, of course, protein bars are probably healthier, and as long as you're not a diabetic, but sometimes you need a piece of chocolate, something to wet your palate. Gummy bears, piece of candy, Jolly Rancher, of course.
So I'm also going to assume this includes gummy bear flavored vapes. We're still good on that too. So that's all good. So we're pretty much approved.
But what about like floss and toothpaste and
things to that's snooze fest?
No, you get that stuff from the
oral hygiene, razors. I don't know.
What do you have for the next one, chaps?
All right, this one's a little bit different. We really need your advice. Black market vaccines. Like if you can get. some measles shots or some smallpox vaccines on the low, do you think?
You mean in other countries or in the United States?
No, just like if you bought them from somebody who said that they had some like out of a van, like if you come across a lot of vaccines like at the back of a van.
I'm going to have to lean towards no, unless you're in a third world country.
That's your first firm no, so yeah. We respect it. That's your first firm no.
No black market vaccines.
Especially not in the United States, definitely not. Mm-hmm. You can go to the health department and get vaccines for free. You can get, you know, your measles, your flu shot. You can get STD testing.
Didn't know that.
You can go in and get treated for syphilis and not even have to give your name or show your ID here in New York.
Where is this again? It's been a rough weekend for old Kate.
Katie Two Warts is what they call her. the next one.
Thanks, buddy.
The next one is one you actually sent some of your friends who were deployed.
Oh, well, there's one more in there, scented baby wipes. Now, is that scented ones? Shouldn't you go for the non?
Well, it depends. If you have sensitive skin, then non-scented, non-fragranced. But that's actually a good idea, because if you're out in the desert in the middle of nowhere and you can't shower,
yeah,
that's actually a good
you
idea.
You probably need
some
a little.
Purell hand wipes and cleaning
some baby wipes.
Good idea.
The next one, I have sent a ton of this to someone overseas once. Pre-cooked bacon.
The jerky?
It's awful. Yeah, it's like the super dried sheets of, but I feel like in moderation, could be okay.
Yeah, a little bit is okay. Just watch your salt intake, you know, for anybody that has high blood pressure.
And then
yes.
That's
good because it's a food that doesn't have to be refrigerated. It's not non-perishable, so.
Right. Now, the non-perishable thing was a huge one because my next one, have you ever heard of a New Orleans king cake?
Tell me about that.
It's this syrupy, sugary circle, and then you hide a baby inside of it. And on Mardi Gras, they send it out.
Not a real baby.
Oh, yeah. Just a fake one.
You know, I think we're going to go on the record now. We're very much against putting real babies in cakes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we can all agree. But fake baby inside the cake. And then everybody eats it. Whoever finds the baby gets a prize or something like that. I had a friend from that area whose mom sent him a king cake in a trash bag. Like, to keep it fresh. Oh. And when it arrived, it was like, he was just like picking out the parts that had gone bad and was like, still good.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with that. I'm not sure how long it'll take if you mail something to get overseas, a week or so.
Yeah, a sugary.
The last thing you want to do is send them something where they're going to get food poisoning, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea.
Right.
So be careful with those types of
things. Speaking of diarrhea, I've had diarrhea since Easter of 2007. Do you think that that's a problem?
Yes. Do you have any history of IBS?
Oh, yeah. Long history, over a decade of history.
Have you seen a GI doctor to make sure you don't have like celiac disease or lactose intolerance? Figure out what's causing this so we can try to...
What I usually do is take like 4 or 5 Imodium pills a day.
So you've been taking it every day for years and it does the trick for you?
For a decade.
This is a true story because when we travel for videos, he's like crushing Imodium.
But you could be allergic to something, and if you just eliminate that from your diet, that could eliminate all the Imodium that you're having to take.
This, we actually brought you in as a guest so we could get a free doctor visit.
Of course. Ask
We're
away.
Falling apart right now. And we need...
I'm so used to it.
It could be because of all the cigarettes and booze, though. I mean, honestly. That too.
But we did notice that you have been to even most recently, this past week you were at the White House regarding the opioid crisis. And what's that? Oh, yeah.
I was like, how does she know that?
Stalking it out.
Research division.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. I'm impressed.
Doing a little intel. You recently met with Secretary of the VA, Robert Wilkie.
Yep.
And we just had a couple of questions about that, too. What are your ties with... Do you have any ties at the VA? What was that conversation about?
Well, when I was a medical resident in Arkansas, I worked at the VA. And I absolutely loved it. I loved taking care of the veterans there. Many of them actually had COPD from smoking, and it was one of my favorite jobs, and it was just an honor to be able to take care of them. So I used to work at the VA as part of my medical training in Arkansas, in Fayetteville.
Oh, wow.
So it just all sort of stemmed from there, and plus my connections with my sister, Julia, who was an officer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's crazy is what a small world. When I met with Secretary Wilkie recently, his assistant knew my sister from years ago when they served in the Middle East.
Such a small world.
It was amazing.
Yep. That's great. Well, this time around, what were you meeting with him about, and what was the...
So he just took over. He was just confirmed by the Senate to be the new Secretary of the VA. So mm-hmm. he really inherited sort of a disaster, if you will.
Not a fun task.
From a medical perspective, from working in the ER, taking care of patients, my perspective of what needs to be done, where are the weaknesses, how can we better help veterans and their families as well. Mm-hmm. And he also laid out, you know, what he wants to tackle. I don't know if you saw it, just came out again yesterday. It's very sad. About 22 veterans a day take their life. Mm-hmm. They commit suicide. And that's one of the number one priorities for Secretary Wilkie and his team to help tackle.
Well, especially, I don't know if you saw the news, too, that here was the budget they had for suicide prevention. Such a small chunk of it.
$2 million was allocated, and they used $57,000.
And so I think the VA already has an optics problem. And I think it's easy, we've talked about it on here before, for everybody to shit on the VA and be like, oh, it's so bad. Really, I've had great experiences there. I've had not so great experiences. Sometimes it just depends. But overall, the people who work there care. Mm-hmm. The people who go there get great treatment. But there's also these huge gaps, and I think it keeps people, like news like that keeps people from going there in the first place, which is also a bad and dangerous thing. So hopefully, you know, no small task to Robert Wilkie, but hopefully he's got...
And mentioning, you said you had good and bad experiences there. One of his priorities as well was, believe it or not, customer service.
Yeah.
Really taking care of patients, veterans, and their families, not just get them in and get them out. So I thought that was really important as well.
It is, and we are on board with anything that they can do to help the VA. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciate your time. Thank you for the advice, because I know that we have a lot of people who send out care packages, and they will be thrilled to write in the little package, this was actually prescribed by a doctor, whenever they get their cans of dip and cigarettes
in there.
Oh, goodness,
you're gonna get me in trouble. Absolutely, anytime.
She was very, very... a good sport. I mean, because I think a lot of times she's still a doctor. Like, she still sees people.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the television doctors don't do that. She's an active doctor who sees people. So getting asked questions about do you support smoking and porn, I don't think was exactly
probably
what she
not.
Was expecting when she walked into the Barstool building today. But that's what happened.
And she was a I'll say it. She was a goddamn delight.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she was awesome.
She was a delight.
That's got to be the best way to do it, though, as a doctor, to keep doing your normal day job and then also get some TV gigs. Double the pay. Not bad.
Double the pay.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. All right, we're going to move into another interview that we had with Chris Spatola. He's an Army guy, West Point guy. Shout out to Cons. He played basketball and then at Army and then went on to coach at Duke, won a national championship. And he has an interesting story about his spouse, too. Let's listen to that interview with Chris Spatola.
All right. Now on Zero Blog 30, very interesting guest. He was a four-year starter on the basketball team at West Point. He was all Patriot League team in 2001 and 2002, as well as the all-freshman team in 1999. I don't know what happened in 2000. He got a job there, it seems like. He is the Academy's sixth all-time leading scorer, and he was the team captain for his senior season. He was a standout on the All-Army and All-Armed Forces basketball teams in 2003. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Zero Block 30, Chris Spatola. Chris, how you doing?
Connor, it's good to be with you, brother. Thanks for having me on with you.
I appreciate you joining us. So I guess, you know, obviously a very storied, nice career at West Point, so we might as well just start at the beginning. What led you to West Point?
You know, it's a great question, because I didn't fit the typical military or cadet profile. You know, I had no family who had been in the military. I really hadn't even thought about a military academy. But I knew I wanted to play Division I basketball. And, you know, I was 6 feet tall, 140 pounds, maybe. And so I didn't have a whole lot of offers. And West Point Army saw me at an AAU tournament. Dino Gaudio was the head coach at the time, and one of his assistants, Marcus Perez, saw me there, and they started recruiting me. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, you know, I think my parents fell in love with the idea before I did. And then when we took our visit to West Point, I still give Coach Gaudio a lot of hell about it because he basically recruited my parents. He sold them on the pageantry, and you know how it is up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and sometimes it's easier to sell the parents than it is the kids, especially when
– And it was in this case, man. It definitely was. Yeah. So, you know, he did a good job there. And I, again, I wanted to be a Division I basketball player. My parents were both teachers, so we didn't have a lot of money. So, you know, the opportunity to go to school for free was big time. And so that kind of – That was the genesis of it all.
Right, right. And then obviously, you know, I read all your accolades. You ended up having a really nice career. So, I mean, the fact that you weren't really.
Yeah, you know, I did. And I wasn't. And, you know, part of the deal was I went to the West Point prep school first. And part of that was I had to get bigger and stronger and all that. But if you had told Coach Gaudio, and this is no slight to him or anybody who recruited me from Army, that I'd end up the fifth all-time leading scorer when it was all said and done, nobody would have thought that. So it was now my academic career was not quite as stellar, but certainly on the basketball court, we had a good time.
Right, but nobody really asks you about your grades now, so that doesn't really matter as far as I'm concerned. All right. So, I mean, you were at West Point at an interesting time. Obviously, you know, 9/11 happens and then, you know, we go to war. But you graduate and you stick around as a grad assistant coach for a year, which, you know, is your first foray into coaching. Was that something that you consciously wanted to do, or they said, hey, Chris, we want you to stick around and help the team out for a year?
You know, West Point does a good job with that. They have a program where for all the sports, they keep one, you know, usually the team captain, but they'll keep one player at West Point to be a grad assistant. It's usually for a year. As you said, 9/11 happened my senior year. So I really only got to do it for about 6 months because after about 5 months, the Army called and said, hey, look, we're going to need you and you're going to have to get to your basic course and you know, enough of this playing coach. We need you for bigger and better things, but it was a great experience. Cause I didn't know what coaching was. I didn't know what it meant to be a coach. You know, it gave me an opportunity to learn from that side of things. So it was, even the 6 months was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, so I was fortunate to do the same thing on the football team, and it's crazy. You watch coaches your whole playing career growing up and you think they're one thing and then you actually do it for yourself and you realize, wow, this is really different than what I thought.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, like there are certain things you just don't see that go into running a program, and the football program there is even bigger and it's a much larger animal. So there's that side of it that I think, you know, a lot of players say, well, I want to be a coach. Well, it ain't just about, you know, running drills and X's and O's and drawing things on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into a program functioning.
Right, right. Okay, so then we go into the Army. Obviously, you served in Iraq honorably. You come home from Iraq and you get out of you're getting ready to get out of the Army. You know, a lot of times guys come out of West Point and they look for Fortune 500 companies and, you know, find a job, suit and tie. What led you to coaching right out of the Army?
You know, I wanted to do something in basketball. And
had you done it? And I'm sorry, let's take a step back. Because you did a little bit with basketball still while you were in the Army, playing for the All-Army team.
I did, yeah. So they still had, and we didn't think they were going to do it. They, you know, every year they have the All-Armed Forces tournament. So all Marines, all Air Force, all Navy, all Army, they get together, play a round robin. And they ended up doing it that year, and I got called to do it. And so, again, a great experience. Normally, they pick an all-armed forces team, and then that team travels overseas and plays, and they didn't do that. But, yeah, so I got to do that. But, you know, ultimately, you know, that year to 14 months in Iraq was sort of the bulk of my experience. And I had, as great as that was, and I wouldn't give that back. I mean, there was a lot I learned in that year. That was enough for me. And so, and I didn't know, again, I didn't really know if coaching was going to be my future. I knew I wanted to do something in sports and in basketball. And then the opportunity at Duke opened up, and it was a special opportunity.
Okay. So, I mean, Duke, you know, no slouch when it comes to the basketball world. You're talking about Coach K, who is coaching royalty, and Duke, who has such a prestigious program. how is it that you came right out of the Army and then you land such a coveted role on a staff that I'm sure hundreds of coaches are vying for every year?
Yeah. Well, I was married and still am to coach's daughter. So obviously that
okay,
helps.
I didn't want to put you on the spot. I knew that, but I just wanted to.
No, I appreciate your tact. Nicely done. Most people, they just come right out with that. No, I mean, obviously that has a lot to do with it. Okay. I think what a lot of people don't understand is I actually knew Coach professionally before I even met his daughter. Cause I used to go down, my dad was my high school coach and he used to drive my brother and I down from the Northeast every year to go to his camp, Coach K's camp. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the camp for a few years. And so I knew Coach, I was one of the better players at the camp. So Coach kind of knew who I was and I obviously knew who he was. And so it was, I think it was the third year that we were there that, I wasn't so much into becoming a better basketball player. I was into picking up girls. And so I made the big play on the coach's daughter. But, you know, as any self-respecting guy would do. But, so, I mean, look, I obviously Coach K went to West Point, played there. So we had that in common. He had known me for a while. We had stayed in communication. We talked a lot when I was over in Iraq for that year. I mean, he sent a lot of gear and sent gear to our unit and wrote, he and I were in constant contact. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, coming back and being a coach. And I'm sure there was part of him that wanted I was stationed in Oklahoma. I'm sure there was part of him that wanted his daughter back in North Carolina with them. But
sure.
So that was kind of the genesis. And yeah. He didn't clear a spot. A spot had opened up as a GA and he wouldn't hire me if he didn't think I could do a good job, which I'm thankful for. So it worked out.
Right. Cause I'm sure people must say, oh, you got that job because you married his daughter.
Yeah. And you know what? And there's a lot of that. That's probably true. Now here's the thing. Sure. You might get that job because of that, but you're not keeping that job if you aren't capable of doing it. And I work my ass off to be good enough and to be mm-hmm. worthy of that type of a position.
Right. And I mean, yeah, as you said, I mean, you didn't just stick around for a year. You were around 2007 to 2012. You enjoyed some very nice years, 4 ACC titles, a national championship. Talk about that experience just coaching at that level with Coach K and having all that success at Duke.
It informs everything I do now for ESPN. The opportunity to, I mean, you dream of a national championship. You never expect that you'll be in that situation. Do it. And you know, that year in 2010, that was a special team. I don't know if Coach K ever have a team like that again, where you're starting 3 seniors and 2 juniors, and mm-hmm. it was a very unexpected run. So I mean, it was great. And to be able, you know, we had the USA basketball experience also, you know, right. I got to help a couple years with that.
Yep.
So that period of time, and then to kind of see the transition to the one and done, we began that while I was still there. Mm-hmm. It informs everything I do now. It was coaching was not something I wanted to do long term, but those years I was there were incredible.
Right. And then you talk about going to the Olympics and winning a gold medal. What was that experience like when you're talking about you're playing with or coach, excuse me, coaching with Coach K and then the players on your team are the best players in the world. So yeah. What was that experience like?
You know, it was an unbelievable experience from the standpoint of the building of a culture. Mm-hmm. Like when he took over USA basketball, obviously there was a reason that they were just changing the entire thing because, right. you know, we were not very well respected in the world. Mm-hmm. So to be there on the ground floor for that transition was incredible. To see how different Coach K was with his Duke team versus USA basketball. Like, he adjusted his leadership style based on who he was coaching.
You got adults versus kids. So
absolutely.
Professional athletes making millions of dollars, they're not going to respond to the same type of coaching.
Yep. Tone matters. Like, his tone with those guys was different than his Duke team. And to see that, and he never really told us, like, hey, this is how I'm going to be. You just kind of observe the choices and the decisions he's made. That was cool. I mean, obviously, to be around the level of players. I mean, the Kobe's in 2008 and the Durant's and the LeBron's. I mean, that you can't put a price on that. And then the coaches, I mean, Mike D'Antoni, Nate McMillan, Tom Thibodeau, it was an incubator for just the learning of basketball, the teaching of basketball. It was a PhD. You were basically getting a PhD in basketball.
Right. And I mean, obviously you were just absorbing so much from them from a basketball sense that it would help you in your coaching career and now in your broadcasting career. But how much were you able to provide for them having served in the Army and having served in combat?
You know, a little bit. I mean, I tried to keep my mouth shut as you know, most of the time, but, you know, I think a big part of getting those pro players to buy in was giving them a patriotic context and giving them the understanding that, you know, you're playing with USA on the front of your shirt, and that means something. And I think, you know, Coach K brought in a lot of wounded warriors, a lot of military folks as a part of that process. And so I think my experience and sort of relating my experience was a very small part, but a part of that, you know, contextualizing all of that for those pro guys.
Mm-hmm. And was there ever a moment when those guys, you mentioned some of the names, LeBron's, Kobe's, whoever, Durant, they heard you served in combat and they kind of, you know, did a little turn like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They ask a lot of questions. Like right. They were fascinated by that.
Right.
And it's so funny because, you know, and then I'm wanting to ask them questions about right. like who they are and what they're doing. And I mean, you know, man, we come from the same place. Like there's a humility about military folks. Mm-hmm. Like you want to know what I did. Like this is what we do. You know, right. You just put your right hand up and we go off and we do what folks ask us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were very curious and it kind of blew my mind. Like you'd think they'd be very, like it wouldn't resonate with them or they wouldn't want to hear that or whatever. They were very curious and asked a lot of questions and were very respectful of, you know, not only me, but the other military folks as well who came in.
That is really refreshing to hear. So we do the coaching and then, you know, it's so natural. You see so often coaches go right into broadcasting and that's exactly what you did. But again, you didn't have any sort of broadcasting background from what you studied at West Point, and then you were in the Army. So I guess the only natural background that you had was the coaching. So how is it that you made that transition into broadcasting?
You know, I wanted to stay in basketball in some capacity. Quality of life was big for me. So, you know, I wanted to do something where I could kind of be my own boss and be an independent contractor in some respects and be able to raise my kids. And I think, you know, deploying and being in the Army and you know how grueling that lifestyle is, I think I valued comfort of life even more. And so I got lucky. I mean, look, a lot of life is getting lucky, being in the right place at the right time. And I ended up, I didn't know if broadcasting was what I wanted to do. It was something that had been thrown out to me. Hey, maybe you might be good at this. I wanted, whatever I did, I wanted to have a voice and at some point be able to have a voice that would resonate.
Sure.
And so I met with CBS Sports Network. They, crazy enough, they had a 15-game Patriot League package that they did. They were looking for an analyst. The meeting went well. And so they hired me, you know, having played at Army, I played in the league. They hired me to do their 15-game package, and it kind of started from there. And once I got the bug, like once I didn't know if I'd be good at it. I didn't know if I'd like it. But once I started doing it, and I started at the bottom. I mean, that's the other thing. I went from Duke, and people thought I was nuts, thought I had a golden ticket. And they're like, what are you? You're leaving Duke. What are you, crazy? And you're doing now, you're doing Lehigh Lafayette women's game. And what are you doing? But I loved it, man. I didn't care what I was doing. I wanted to kill it where I was at, and I got a bug, and it's just kind of grown from there.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of speaks to your character. You go from the Army, and then you start over at the bottom of the coaching ranks, and then you coach, and you're basically at the pinnacle coaching at Duke, and then you start over again in broadcasting. So, I mean, that really speaks to the type of individual that you are. But I wonder, because, again, just like coaching – people see it and they think, oh, I could do that. You know, people sit on their couch and like, oh, what's he doing calling that play? I'm sure it's the same with broadcasting. People watch it and they listen to the guys on their TV on Saturday or on Sunday and say, oh, this guy's horrible. I could do a better job at this. How is that just going into broadcasting and learning that skill? Because it most definitely is a very difficult skill to learn, mm-hmm. I think.
It absolutely is. You know, the talking basketball part of it is the easy part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, my experience as a player and as a coach informs what I do. But I think what people underestimate is the TV element to it. Like, all of a sudden, I'm doing my first game, and I got the headset on, and 3-2-1, that red light comes on, and you got somebody in your ear counting, right. You got this going on. And the technical TV component to it was the thing that was most unsettling at first for me and was the thing that I needed to get used to. And then there's, you know, there's an artistry to delivery. There's an artistry. And that's why they tell you in this business, you got to have reps. You got to just do it and do it and do it. So it's not easy. And look, I mean, you know this, like, there's something to being live. Like, mm-hmm. It is very easy, especially with somebody like me, who's very outspoken, and I sometimes have a potty mouth, you know, like,
yeah,
there's something to live TV where sure. You say the wrong thing and all of a sudden your career's over, and there's a right. pressure to that. But there's also something about being live and doing live TV that just gets the juices flowing, that it's not quite competing. It's not quite being on a bench or playing or whatever, but it's close, man. I mean, there's right. just something live that's cool.
And there's some element there that kind of harkens back to your playing days, and it gives you that adrenaline rush. So I can relate to you there. And, you know, coming from coaching at Duke, obviously you're coaching against some really big names, and now you're on the other side, you're broadcasting. How is that calling games against guys you might have coached against, that you might have to be critical about, guys that you might have a relationship with?
It's awesome. And once they get past the Duke exterior, and again, I tell these, look, I graduated from Army. I didn't go to Duke, all right? I coached mm-hmm. there, and it's awesome. And I think you get so locked in to thinking that one way is the right way, especially when you work for a guy like Coach K, who's had all the success he's had. You get locked into thinking like the Duke way and his way is the way. And then you do USA Basketball, and you see how Jim Boeheim goes about his business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, that guy's a Hall of Famer. That guy's won 1,000 games. Maybe that, you know, there's another way.
Mm-hmm.
And going into all these gyms and talking to these coaches and seeing these shoot-arounds and watching their practices and watching them on the bench, you realize there's a lot of ways to win basketball games. And, sure. you know, I think being able to interact with those guys on a, you know, they can be secure now. Like, it's not, we're not competing over anything. And it's been a really cool part of the experience.
That's awesome. All right. Now, I know you got to head out of here pretty soon, but how do you feel about doing some rapid fire questions to end things out?
I feel great about it.
All right, here we go. All right. What is one game in the history of basketball that you wish you could have had the call on?
Duke, Kentucky, when Leitner hit the shot.
Okay. Okay. That's a good good answer, I would say. Most memorable game as a player?
Wow. You know, we played I had 43 at Lafayette.
No big deal.
In an overtime game, we won. It was my kind of game. We won, I think, 104-103. And that was as good as I have ever felt on a basketball floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have used this game if we hadn't won. So the fact that we won in overtime, it was a really, I think it really sparked our season that year. So that was my career high. That was a hell of a night.
Oh, very nice. And what about as a coach?
Winning that national championship game against Butler. I mean, I will never, the last 5 minutes of that game are still a whirlwind. And I had to watch it back 5, 6, 7 times to just fully understand what happened in that moment. And then the euphoria, the celebration, the hotel that night. I mean, I will never, ever forget winning that, being a part of that experience.
Okay. One thing you miss about the Army?
Being with a unit, being with a small unit. And you know, being at Duke and being on a team, it's not the same. You know, I mean, it's hard to describe. You understand what I'm saying. Right. There is nothing like being with a platoon or being in a battery or a company. Nothing like it.
Absolutely. One thing you don't miss about the Army?
Early mornings. I'm asleep. I've always been a guy who sleeps in, so I don't miss PT, early morning PT.
Okay. All right, this one might be a little difficult, and I don't know, it might get you in trouble around Christmas time coming up, but what is one thing that no one knows about Coach K?
Wow.
It could be about anything.
Yeah. He's a really, really good and competitive hearts player.
Oh, okay.
Hearts. We haven't in a while, but he'll get down on some hearts now, and he gets really competitive, and he tries to shoot the moon a lot for those who know how to play the game. He's a very, very good hearts player.
Interesting. You heard it here first. Okay, and finally, who's your pick to win the national title this year?
Michigan.
Okay, good choice.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chris, I sincerely appreciate you taking time to join us here on Zero Blog 30. You're doing great things. You're out there making us look good, and I really appreciate you joining us today.
I would say the same to you, brother. You are making all of us look good. You're killing it, and I appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, absolutely. Thanks, sir. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks to Chris for coming on the show. Big time episode for us.
Holy,
I think this might be our longest episode.
My God. Mm-hmm.
Definitely our longest.
Not just a big time episode, but a big time year.
Big time year?
Yeah.
Big time year.
True.
Wow.
And you want to do a little ZBT end of the year recap?
Yeah, let's
just
do it.
Just off the top of our domes. We didn't really anticipate doing this, but I think it's appropriate. It's the last episode of the year for us. And we'll start with you, Cons. What are some of your highlights from ZBT this year?
Well, certainly, and it's top of mind, but just the presence that we had down in Philadelphia for the Army-Navy game, it has grown each year. So I thought that was really cool. The fact that we've continued to get really cool guests, and I thought maybe the coolest thing was that, Chaps, you and I got invited to a Starbucks event in New York City a long time ago. Katie, it might have even been before you joined us. Mm-hmm. And I don't think either of us...
Yeah, it was well before that.
Yeah, and I don't know that either of us would have thought anything would have come from that. We were invited. It was a great event. And then the next thing you know,
Especially not because of the way I was dressed.
Yeah, exactly. We went to like some really nice event. Everyone's at least business casual. And then Chaps is in sweats, I think. It was great. Great showing.
Nice.
But at least Chaps is always on brand. I got to appreciate that.
True.
But then, you know, fast forward, and we had a great partnership with Starbucks that allowed us to take an awesome trip to do really cool experiences and really allowed us to reach a whole new audience and helped us to continue to grow. So big thank you to Starbucks for really, I think, kind of taking us to that next level where we're teaming up with major brands and doing some really cool stuff. So
yeah.
Great year, in my opinion.
I agree.
And thank you to all our guests that we had throughout the year.
Yeah. First off, I mean, I'm just going to say so much love to all the listeners and to all the people who have reached out to us on Twitter and Instagram and have commented on our stories and everything and who have followed
along. Which Cons would have started there.
Yeah. But thanks to everybody who has Cons for you. My God. Thanks to everyone except Cons. But no, especially to all the listeners who, I mean, you're the reason we're here and you're the reason we do this and you are what makes it so much fun. Mm. The feedback we get from everybody, it makes it all worth it. And for me, one of the highlights this year was hearing from people who decided to seek help at the Headstrong
yes.
Project, getheadstrong.org. I probably gets old after a while, but I'll always sing their praises. And to have the chance this year to really talk about it and to really tell people, like, no shame to the mental health game, mm-hmm. you do you. Has been it's just such a great feeling. Also, not getting killed by that dog, getting to wear the bite suit, getting the heart pump, just
Olaf.
The opportunities that Starbucks gave us to travel and, you know, getting to go on the field at the Army-Navy game because the whole thing. It's just been a great year.
Beautifully said, Catherine. One more member. Bren, what's your highlight of the year?
My favorite part was the entire Starbucks trip. Getting to travel places that I had never been before, getting to see awesome new cities and making a ton of fun content and feeling like we're making a major contribution to the company with, you know, bringing in a big ad deal, bringing in page views with electric content that I know the Stoolies are going to take to. Being a part of that and really kind of embracing my role in the company was a highlight for me, and watching you guys make awesome content, have a lot of laughs and growing closer with you guys through that trip was definitely a highlight, probably of my year in total, not just Barstool, but a highlight of my year for sure.
Woo-hoo. And we got to thank Bren.
Awesome.
In particular, because obviously the show doesn't happen. We sit here and we come up with ideas and we talk, but Bren does all the hard work behind the scenes, putting it together, producing the show, and we are grateful for you, Bren, that you're able to do such a good job, and you help us and give us ideas and help us continue to grow, because without you, we would just be three veterans talking to nobody. So thank you, Bren.
You're welcome for my service.
There we go.
Yeah.
And Chaps, before we kick it to you, I just want to say also, too, it was very cool that the people who reach out to us and, you know, might be looking for advice for different things, whether it's mental health or, hey, I'm in my case, people have asked, like, hey, I'm going to be an officer. I'm going to go to OCS. What should I do? Or I'm going to Fort Sill. What can you tell me about Fort Sill or being an artillery officer? It really is so humbling and so flattering that people reach out. And I love interacting with people and getting back to them. And I'll always respond to every DM and every email I get. So keep sending them. Chaps?
My couple folds, I think back of where we started whenever Cons and I started the podcast and where we were then, and the sloppy nature of the show and how it was just always kind of disheveled. I couldn't read, like doing the ad reads and things like that, and people stuck with us through all these different episodes. And Cons' commitment, while he has his big boy jobs of being there every day, is inspiring. And we went from one episode to two episodes a couple months ago. And Cons makes it a point to be a part of it because he knows that we're growing something really special. So, Cons, I want to say thank you for everything that you do for the podcast. And I bust your balls a lot because I finally can, as a former staff NCO, can really, really go after an officer, a captain.
So maybe more so than you should at times. No, I'm kidding.
No, no. No, I'm going to dial it up in 2019.
I can't
wait. This is the first year that Kate has been full-time all the way through. She started with us last year.
Yeah,
but being full-time here, I think that our show is great. And just to toot our own horn for a second, the biggest military podcast in the world. And I think having a predominant female voice on that is strong and is encouraging to other women who are around her. I think Kate is a great example of that, to have a strong female presence to show what women are doing in combat roles, not just in support roles as well. Kate is a great addition to the podcast, and we definitely wouldn't be where we are without you, Kate. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you and all the efforts that you've gone and the improvements that you've made, like on the show from when you first started, where we would get messages like, are you sure this is the right fit? Are you sure this is the right
you
fit?
You did!
Now we get messages. Kate is funny. She might be one of the funniest people at Barstool. We really appreciate her. So seeing that growth really inspires like the staff and CO side of me, which I talk about often. But overall, I think what I'm most proud of this podcast is, like Kate said, that we get message after message of people who are encouraged to go and get mental health. And as a staff NCO who admittedly, while I was in, was not that guy who did not encourage my Marines to go get help, it feels like I've almost gotten one of those save rounds or alibis where I can be a good leader, where I can encourage people who are still on active duty to go get help, to seek out Headstrong, to seek out help from the VA. This is something that I view as the most important thing that I'll do in my life, except for being a father and a husband. And I really appreciate the listeners who listen every single week. We appreciate you. We wouldn't have this platform without you. And I promise you one thing, in 2019, we won't take it for granted. Sound the retreat.